Vision 7 Radio Network welcomes Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, heard every Monday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Using nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife evidence, quantum physics, consciousness research, and ancient writings, we seek to understand who and what we are, how reality works, the nature of God, and the meaning and purpose of our lives. Join Roberta weekly to better understand our one reality and gain insights into how we can make the most of the glorious eternal beings that we are.
Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. Of course, I'm Roberta Grimes, and we have a wonderful guest for you today. I'm so glad you could be with us. You know, modern mainstream science is based on a set of assumptions that are now known for certain, even for those scientists who are honest with themselves, to be simply wrong. Scientific orthodoxy insists that what we see around us is real, and that what we experience as human consciousness is generated by our individual brains. What garbage. Scientists continue to believe, even to this day, that consciousness cannot survive the death of the brain, and all the evidence to the contrary of their belief they ignore. The human brain is nothing more important than a two-way radio in the head of a meat robot. That's what it is. It picks up signals from your mind and transmits back signals to your vast eternal mind, which is part of the mind that continuously manifests this universe. You think your mind is in your brain because your eyes and ears are on your head. There's no other reason for that. Your senses tell you that's where you are, but that's not where you are. If you've seen the movie Avatar, you'll understand how easy it is for our minds to be forever safe in a perfect place, while our bodies, these avatars we think are real, are exploring this nonsense that we think of as the world around us. Our guest today is one of the world's leading genuine consciousness researchers. Alex Sakiris, he told me I pronounced his name perfectly, but of course I didn't. Alex Sakiris is a successful entrepreneur turned science podcaster. In 2007, he founded Skeptico, I don't think I can say it the way he does, which is now the number one podcast that covers the science of human consciousness. So it's immensely important. Please do look up Mr. Sakiris and start listening to him. He has appeared on many syndicated stations and programs, much, much fancier than Seek Reality, so we're thrilled that he has been willing to join us. He's well known within the parapsychology circles. I've been hearing about him for years, and the near-death experience research communities as well. And he's the author of a really neat little book that I've been reading this week. It's called Why Science is Wrong About Almost Everything. Welcome, Alex. I am so happy to meet you finally.
Thanks, Roberta. It's been fun getting to know you. We've had quite an email exchange, and it's really been exciting. And as I just told you, I really enjoyed the fun of growing forever. So I'm reading your books now, too, so we can have a mutual admiration.
I think that's what you're all going to hear, everyone. We discovered we just love each other because there's so few people who have done as much work, frankly, as he has in a field that I think is the most important field that exists. And apparently he also feels the same way about me. So this is going to be fun. Now, how did you get started on this, Alex? Where did this come from?
Well, you know, first I have to say, because we also talked about this, I think it's important for folks to know that what I just said is totally genuine, and I think the depth of the spiritual understanding that comes through in your books is exciting. It's rare in that not a lot of people have put everything together in the way that you have. But there's the big but. We don't agree on everything, and we're going to probably have some points of divergence where people would think that we're really coming at this from two completely different sides. And I think that's an important part of the process, too. And I think it's certainly an important thing of what a value that I hold on to dearly as part of Skeptico. And that's that, you know, it's okay to disagree. It's okay to explore the different angles. It's okay to try on different beliefs and even find those beliefs to be proven wrong and come to one conclusion or another. You know, you were telling me a little bit beforehand about your experience with Christianity and that you came rather late in life to kind of challenge those beliefs. I think that's so awesome, and I think it's so rare, not just with Christianity, but most people are so wed and married to their beliefs that they will do almost anything to not change those beliefs. And that's what we're finding in science. That's what my book is really all about, is that if we deconstruct science the way that you talked about it, and it's just incredibly provably wrong, then the question becomes, how can this be? I mean, how can these people maintain this rather craziness that you can deconstruct rather easily? And the answer is because they're really, really married to their beliefs, and they'll do almost anything to not change them, even if they look silly and ridiculous.
Well, they have another problem, too, which is that there's been at least 100 years of science, more than 100 years now, based in what they then called the scientific, fundamental scientific dogma of materialism. And that was, they adopted it originally, it seems, because we were getting such good communications from the dead through deep transmediums in the early part of the 20th century, last part of the 19th. And people were, serious researchers were studying these people and were writing up the transcripts and were publishing them. And you can buy them today. And they were basically waiting for science to realize they had made a great discovery, which actually was a discovery engineered from where the dead are. And scientists were still dealing with quantum mechanics. They continue today to deal with it. They didn't want another complication. So they, the gatekeepers, the peer-reviewed journals, and the university departments established the fundamental scientific dogma of materialism.
You know, but Roberta, it's really important, I think, that we deconstruct all that stuff in a lot of different ways. Because, like, I would also challenge something that you said earlier about the mind-body connection. And I'm not so quick to throw the body into this kind of meat robot thing, because it's clearly not. We're all consciousness is everywhere, right? So whatever that conscious experience we're having through the larger mind, we're also experiencing through the body. But I digress, because here's the point that a lot of the scientists will make and the pushback that they'll make, and I think you have to understand it from a human perspective, and that is the ability of Western science to conquer, control, manipulate, and engineer our physical reality is awe-inspiring. It's unbelievable. We are talking through these microphones on an internet, looking at that crystal clear display on your iMac, and they did all that. And the way they did it was with some rather clunky, if we want to say it now, but some stuff that really works in terms of materialistic science. And if we can back up and just let people know, when we say materialism, scientific materialism, you can think of it from a philosophical perspective. And what it says is that the only thing that exists is what you see, what you feel, and what you measure. And we can sit and kind of throw stones at it. You know, you and I can say, well, that's ridiculous. There's all this love. There's all this spiritual existence. There's all this stuff that, you know, just take when you look at lovingly at your parents or your kids or your newborn, you know, there's more than just stuff you can measure. There's stuff that you just can never measure. But what science has done, and let's give them credit, they've said, wait, I want to put the blinders on, because if I put the blinders on and I don't worry about questions like how many angels fit on the head of a pin, if I ignore all that stuff for a minute, maybe I can make some progress. So we have to be realistic and say, you know what? In some ways, we understand that decision, because the progress they made is unbelievable. We live in the world that they've constructed. But what they did along the way is something called shut up and calculate. And we can talk about that in a minute if you want.
That's exactly right. So, and this, to me, this, you're making some fantastic points. You make some points in your book that, frankly, I had never put together. And I seldom find a book anymore that does that. So that's one reason I'm so thrilled to meet you. To clarify my meat robot comment, just for people listening, everything that exists is consciousness. There is nothing that exists that is not consciousness. As Max Planck said, we cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything we consider to be real, postulates consciousness. So that meat robot is another form of consciousness. It just isn't your mind. It attaches to your mind, not just in your head, actually, but all over your body, which is something Alex just pointed out. But it's very important for us to realize that if you're just looking at what is matter, you're not going to be able to understand much of anything. And as Alex, I have to say, is a much more generous individual than I am. You're going to see that. He's very large-spirited. And he's being kind about science. And I agree with you, Alex, that if they had to study only one thing at once, they could have put aside looking at what's actually going on for another 20 or 30 years. But 120 years is too long.
Right.
It's time for us to tell them, hey, wait a minute, you're missing something big, which we've been trying to tell them and they're not listening to. This is an exciting conversation which is going to be had. And the pioneer of it really is our guest today. So we're going to be hearing, the world will hear from him. He's much younger than I am. And therefore, he has the time to wait out the ignorance that is still predominant in science. And yes, it's true. Science has brought us a lot of material advances, but the dead can mess with electricity. They can mess with matter. That's how we get signs from the dead. So even in this little world that they've designed for themselves, that Alex is charitable enough to recognize, even there, they have no idea what really is going on. And Alex Sakaris, who is the world's leading researcher in the field of consciousness. And I want to ask him now for us to define. This is something that, by the way, I've never seen a scientist do with any kind of common sense attached. How would you define consciousness, Alex?
You know what I always say, and in the book I have a little experiment, is you don't stop, pause for a minute, and just say hello inside your head. And what hears that, we all hear that, and you can actually do that, you know. I mean, I think your audience is way past that. But for people that are caught up, as I wasn't, I want to tell a story in just a minute. What hears that is consciousness, is the other. You know, and if I could tell just a little story, my background was really, and I appreciate you saying I'm a consciousness researcher. That's so awesome. I've talked to so many of the world's leading consciousness researchers that I sometimes think I do know more than I do. But all I've done is just talk to a bunch of people, and about 400 of them at this point. But I've talked to so many of the leading consciousness researchers in the world and academics. I mean, people that, you know, you have to kind of really got to grit your teeth and say, can I handle this interview? Because this guy has these PhDs and all these credentials. But I've found that was really an important thing for me to push through, too, because so many people are intimidated by the lab coat kind of persona that is these people put forward. And when you really push them, so many of them are just full of crap, like we're saying, and they can easily be kind of pulled apart. But, you know, back to the little story, my path was really as business. I was raised in that kind of by my father, who was very business oriented and success oriented. We weren't rich by any means, but that was certainly a value that was instilled in me. So I was on the business path. But I also had, I don't know where it came from, this spiritual kind of path as well. And I was brought up in the Greek Orthodox Church, and I certainly wasn't getting it there. I thought that was just a complete waste of time. But yoga and some of the Eastern traditions appealed to me. So I remember being a 25-year-old kid working my first job at the accounting firm Pricewaterhouse and taking a yoga class with a yoga instructor through the TV. This was on old PBS, and there was this woman who was doing yoga class. And at the end of the yoga class, she goes, okay, now I want you to sit quietly and calm the voice inside your head. So I was like, okay, I'm following the instructions. And for a split second, the voice inside my head was calmed and went away. For me, I can't tell you, Roberta, this was a life-changing experience because I never knew there was a voice inside my head.
Right.
I thought that was me. That was me. There was nothing else. That constant chatter was me. So to even get just a glimpse that there might be something else in there, I think was life-changing. So that's why I guess I always relate back when people say, you know, what is consciousness? Well, it's that voice inside your head that you may not even appreciate is just the chatter of one aspect of this larger consciousness that you have. And there's so much more if you begin to explore it.
Yes. That's what interests me, because Alex has basically come at the same topic from the opposite direction. I began it by trying to understand my childhood experience of light, and I felt that if I figured out where the dead were, I would be able to figure out where the voice came from that I heard during that experience, and I think that turned out to be right. So I came at all of this information from the viewpoint of people we used to think were dead, and I handicapped myself considerably by refusing to read anything published after 1950, because I was sure that you know, people were just trying to make a buck. And that, because that's my background is so different from Alex's, I know some things, I think, that he doesn't know. But because he has gone into the lists, as it were, I mean, there are a number of interviews, the transcripts of interviews in his book, which, again, I think everybody ought to read. It's called Why Science is Wrong About Almost Everything, and you're going to love it. But when I read those transcripts, it was amazing to me that this man, who didn't have all those credentials, was directly challenging people who were sure that they knew 100% of everything that could be known and making them look ridiculous. And the fact that you dare to do that in your podcast is really amazing to me. I think I admire you so much for that. I've never dared to do anything like that.
Well, that's really terrific of you to say. And I want to bring up a point that you just touched on, because I think it's fascinating. It's something I've talked about so many times on the show with so many guests, and that's that, and I mean this again sincerely without kind of just trying to be this mutual admiration thing. I think it's really cool that you came at things from such a deep, personal, spiritually transformative experience, and yet you found your path through that, and you wind up being, you know, a business attorney, which I think is such an interesting combination, right? Because you're maintaining this light and love experience because that's what you found, but you're balancing it with the rational mind of an attorney that says, wait a minute, I have to understand how to construct and win an argument. I think that's terrific. I run into that all the time in Skeptico, and I'll give you an example of, because this is the other side of Skeptico. So, you know, one side of it is these scientists from Yale or New York University or Harvard, and I've spoken to them all, and they do look absolutely ridiculous when you deconstruct materialism. And as you point out, you show how many times it's been falsified over and over again. Even, you know, Max Planck, like you referenced several times in this interview, one of the most highly esteemed quantum physicists of all times. Just go look what he says. He's just as clear as he could be. He says, consciousness, it's all consciousness. We can kind of forget everything else. Right. And yet, you know, you'll see, like in some of my interviews, well, sometimes people will just completely say that Max Planck didn't say that, or he said the opposite. And it's like, how are you? You're a Harvard. The one guy I'm thinking of, it was from Harvard. You know, it's like you're writing books. You claim to know this stuff. Just go read what he said. How are you trying to twist it around? But anyways, that's where we wind up. But so if we go to the other side of science, then we also have to look at what information is coming back from people who do have these experiences, and to what extent are they maybe pigeonholing them in a way that needs a healthy dose of science, needs a healthy dose of, you know, your business attorney background that says, wait, just because you had a near-death experience that was a very Christian experience, that doesn't mean that that invalidates all these other near-death experiences that were not Christian, or went somebody who saw the light and the love and said, you know, all religions are valid, you know. So we have to use the same tools of discernment to try and, the best we can, wrap our arms around what's really going on. And so some of that we have to push aside science and say, hey, you have to be more honest. But then I think we also have to reach out to people who have had spiritual experiences and are trying to get at them and understand them and say, you know, we need to have some discernment there too and really figure out the best we can what's going on. And it always comes back to the personal experience. That's the only thing that ever matters. So we're just kind of playing with ideas.
No, it is a blessing when people have a personal experience. But I think that the evidence is such now that any open-minded person who studied your book and some of my books, and I have a couple of others I'd recommend to them, has to come to the inescapable conclusion that there is one gigantic reality in both mainstream science and every religion get it wrong. They get it wrong, and for the same reason, actually, because all religions and mainstream science are all based on a dogma, and anything with a dogma is a belief system frozen in time. Christianity is frozen in time, really, 2,000 years ago when everything was thought up. Had nothing to do with Jesus then, has nothing to do with Jesus now. And mainstream science, maybe, as you very charitably say, Alex, maybe they meant to just take a step back from the afterlife stuff, but 120-some-odd years is too long to take a step back. I think it's time for them to come into the light. There is one reality. That's why we call my podcast Seek Reality, because all of us should be doing that. Now, one of the points, and he makes a number of points, frankly, in his book, Alex does, that I had never thought about before and that are important. And it's because his ideas are so balanced. He doesn't disrespect science as I do. I mean, frankly, I think that they're going to have to throw out every book about science ever written over the past 100 years. That's how far off track they've gone. And as I often say on this podcast, I read Scientific American as a humor magazine because they repeatedly come up against walls and Alex or I could tell them what it is that's going on, but they can't even investigate it. Sometimes they're so frustrated, they actually say, maybe our model is wrong. That model is the idea that we can understand matter, we understand everything. Now, there is a reason why, and I never understood this till I read his book, there is a reason why it is that science, mainstream science, has to maintain this illusion that that nothing is spiritual and that the brain is the source of consciousness. I never thought about this, but he's absolutely right. Why are they insisting on being so willfully ignorant when there's so much evidence right out for you and me to see that their materialist dogma is wrong? Well, there's a very, very important reason why, and understanding that helps me understand a whole lot better where we're going from here. Why is it that it's so essential to modern mainstream science that our consciousness originate in our brains? Because they hold to that so fast and so hard. Why? Why, Alex?
Well, I hope I nail this in the way that you've set it up now. But basically, and that's really the point of this book, Why Science is Wrong About Almost Everything, which is a title that really, more than I thought, sends people over the edge. I mean, they just get frothing at the mouth. What do you mean science is wrong about almost everything? And the point really is that I think, as you and I have talked about, we can pretty easily show anyone who's halfway open-minded that science is wrong about consciousness. This idea that consciousness is purely a brain-based phenomenon, that it begins with the brain, ends with the brain, that's just falsified over and over again by the scientific literature and by some very good scientific experiments that I talk about on the show and in the book. So my point has always been that if science is wrong about consciousness, well, then science is really wrong about almost everything. Because if you do a scientific experiment, and the one that I give an example of in the book is to say, let's say we're going to say, what temperature boils water? What temperature do we need to get to boil water? And you say, well, it's 212 degrees Fahrenheit, you know. And they say, oh, wait a minute. The altitude turns out to have a little bit of a difference here. If you're down here at sea level, that's true. If you're up in the mountains, temperature changes a little bit. It's a little bit different. So there are factors that we have to control in every experiment if we're going to be able to measure and get good results. This is obvious. I remember that you learned this in fifth grade science. Wait a minute, though. What about consciousness? If we introduce consciousness into the equation, now we have to put an asterisk next to everything science does, right?
Yes, that's the insight. Yes.
Everything. That's so gross. Even that water boiling experiment, we say, well, we think it's 212, but we didn't really factor in consciousness. And whether, you know, if you want to say God, or if you want to say the devil, or if you want to say my Uncle Joe in spiritual form, might have been able to come in and change that experiment in a way that I couldn't control it. Well, if you open yourself up to that as a scientist, you see there's really no end to it. The little asterisk that says I had to just forget about consciousness as part of my experiment, that asterisk has to go on everything. So you really don't have you, what you've done is you've obsoleted science. You've said this is as far as we can get with our means of measuring stuff.
Yeah, you've nailed it. What he says in his book is, the problem science has with consciousness has an impact on every aspect of science as we know it. That's huge. And it's true. Anyone who has studied the abundant literature on signs that the dead give us knows that they can override what we think of as the laws of physics anytime they want to. They can not only mess with electricity, they can make flowers appear where they shouldn't, totally out of season. They can do just about anything. They try to do benign things. Oh, a big thing they also can do is make rainbows appear whenever they want to. They try not to scare us with their signs, or you would be amazed to see the things that the human mind can do when it has been reunited in the afterlife levels. Their minds are very powerful. But to even acknowledge there is an afterlife is like a string that they're handing us. We would tug on, and it would destroy 100+ years of science in this country. They're not going to do that till their own kids graduate from college.
After that, get a job.
Yes, right, and get a job. After that, if they have to retire on a pension that was unjustly earned because they were not doing – see how I'm bitter about this. You're not bitter. I love that, Alex, about you. But the fact is that's the reason why they fight this so hard. It's not because we're wrong. More and more of them – you and I both hear from them. They know we're right. And that's the real problem they have. They just want to get through this career. Another great thing that Dr. Planck said is that science advances by deaths. There have been a lot of deaths between when he said those words and today. But these people are hoping their deaths will happen before this all falls apart. We just know for certain it will fall apart. And I think that's a very important insight for everyone to take. The question is time. How do you think that light will finally dawn on the marble head of each scientist in this country? How is that going to happen?
Well, you know, there's a point where I don't think we necessarily totally agree and see things the same way. I mean, I think I'm amazed at the history that you just alluded to and how long materialistic science has been able to dance this dance.
Right.
And
amazing.
It is amazing. But I think you also have to look at it in the larger context of geopolitics and other aspects of our world that we accept as true, and then we find that they're not true and that someone else has some ulterior motives that is really behind it. Well, all that is another layer of this kind of reality puzzle that we're trying to put together. Now, none of that stuff is important, because the only thing that matters is spirit and your personal journey through that spirit. But it is, in a way, important, because we're all trying to figure this out the best way we can. I'm just resistant to the idea that we are at a special time. When anyone says, oh, we're at a special time and there's a consciousness transformation happening. I see the evidence for that. I see why people say that. But I also, you know, can go look at some very, very, very old books from a lot of different cultures that had a lot of this stuff down and figured out a long time before we did.
Yes.
and that change didn't happen. From a political standpoint, you know, we think whether you think things are fantastic or if you think things are horrible, just go study history. You can find times that were a lot worse. You can find times that were a lot better. You can find people that thought they would rule the world forever, and they did rule it for a lot longer than we have. So I think we have to be very humble with that. And the other thing that really completely complicates things is this idea of time. Because one thing that science has shown us, and it's confirmed really in the spiritual literature that you're alluding to, is that our idea of time is just ridiculous. But this idea of linear time and, you know, yesterday and tomorrow. I mean, we all live that because we can't live otherwise. It's the most convenient way to put things together. But what if that's not really the structure of reality? Well, that, again, changes everything. So
totally.
The fact that we're here and, oh, these science nitwits, you know, haven't come around and we get all worked up about that. Well, that's just. It's just a random point on the timeline that we've kind of put our finger on and said, oh, let's focus on this. So there's really a lot to pull apart there. I think we, as I've mentioned earlier, what I get excited about and excited talking to people like you, Roberta, is the balancing of the two, the trying to grow our spiritual light and spiritual love. And at the same time, holding on to that discernment quality. That's important to me. That's what Skeptico is about. I want to be able to still use my logical mind to discern things, to look at the other side of things. And, you know, for some people, they're built different. That's not important. They have an experience or they just hear somebody talk about light and love, and that's just their whole thing. Well, that's great. That's not the way I'm built because I don't see the world as all light and love. And I have to try and understand how to navigate that landscape.
No, I think that this is part of why I love having you as a guest. We're going to do this a lot. It's important for us to answer the question, I think, those of you listening, let's answer Alex's question about why we think this time is different. It's only because those that we used to think were dead are saying that. Apparently, up until 1945, it was assumed that we were going to work it out ourselves, even though the energy on Earth had become so negative. It was necessary, and we were going to get better. But then we exploded atomic bombs in war. And that was the moment, apparently, when those that we used to think were dead took over, and they decided they were going to have to raise our consciousness. And in order to do that, they were going to have to start to tell us the truth. And many people, I was born 1 year almost to the day after they exploded those bombs. Many people who are now in their 50s, 60s, and 70s came in right after that. So the only reason we think that this stuff is going to really change things is because that's what the dead tell us. Now, they're not always right. They can't predict the future, but since it's their will that's behind this elevation of our consciousness, we think they're, and they actually think too, that they're going to be successful. They're not intervening actively in the world. They're intervening in the person of people like Alex Sakiris, who doesn't even realize until maybe I'm saying it to him now, that of course he has beings who are using him, and he's doing a beautiful job of it. These are the things that modern mainstream scientists believe. One, I maintain that my life has no purpose and no meaning. The same is true for the entire universe. There is no purpose to anything. Number two, I affirm that my morals come from my genes and my conditioning, not from decisions I make. Free will is an illusion. My personal identity is also an illusion. Believe it or not, they say that. There are no good deeds or good people. There's no bad, evil, or wrong either. Every report of encounters with spirits, angels, ghosts, and supernatural beings is bunk. The credibility or number of witnesses does not matter. It is all bunk. And number five, I am my physical brain and nothing more. The death of my body is the death of me. I would never have put it that clearly, but those are all things that mainstream scientists have to believe.
Yes.
As you point out in your book, they have no option but to believe those things.
Yeah, that's such a great point, Roberta. That really is the point. And, you know, I've found over the years as I talk to that with people, they always want to find wiggle room. And there isn't any, like you're saying, there really isn't. Like, take the first one. That's where people really always pull back and want to find wiggle room, they say. I mean, I've talked to Dr. Stephen Novella, Yale neurologist, interviewed him several times. And, you know, you'll say, well, Steve, that you're saying that life has no meaning. He goes, well, what? No, not my personal life. You know, just there's no meaning in the universe. The universe doesn't have meaning. Look, okay, wait a minute. Again, this is like, you and I, this is like simple logic, but this is how we get mesmerized. Like, newsflash here, Steve, the universe encompasses everything, including your life. So if the universe has no meaning, then your life has no meaning. Or turn it around. If your life has any meaning at all, that speck of meaning, that love you have for your child, if that has meaning, or your hope for the future, if that has meaning, if any part of your life has meaning and your life is in the universe, well, then the universe has meaning. So you've just contradicted yourself.
Right.
So this is the dilemma, like you and I are saying, that the people who look at this, the hardest thing that people have, the hardest problem people have with this, Roberta, is just saying, how can this be? How can they be teaching? How did I get taught this in science class if they knew it was wrong? Why are we teaching my kids this if we know it's wrong? Why is this being perpetuated? That's the hard part. That's where people go, there has to be something wrong here. Roberta, Alex, you guys have to have something wrong. It can't be that messed up. And the answer is it is that messed up.
It is.
But you know what? You said I only had a couple minutes. I'm not down with everything you said. And we'll have to talk again, and I'll tell you why. Because I think there's more complicated possible contradictory evidence. You know, I just interviewed this guy, and he's doing this fabulous documentary on this important figure, Dr. Andrea Padreich, who is this guy who is central to the deep state, mind control, MK Ultra stuff that our government was doing that was really horrible. But he also had these series of incredible seances with these ascended beings who talked just as you did about, you know, the future of the planet, the future of why we're in this predicament. And the issue that I think is interesting about that is, one, verifying how that's true. But then also, what do we do when we compare and contrast that? And we have one group of ascended masters who say one thing and another group of ascended masters who say another thing. And that to me is
a skeptic. I'd love to see the example of that.
What next time? We'll talk about it at length. We'll talk about Andrei Padreich and the nine. But anyone who's interested can go begin researching that. And so what do you do with that? What do you do when you have conflicting accounts from ascended masters that you've, in the best way possible, you know, you can't really verify that kind of stuff, but you've used the best principles of the time. This guy's top-notch scientist, Andrei Padreich. I mean, very, you know, PhD, Northwestern, tons of research into ESP, was interested in this cutting edge paranormal kind of stuff and was interested in it and controlling it. So not someone who would sit down at a seance and go, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed, I believe everything you say. The opposite of that, you know, the most skilled researcher you'd want in that situation.
There's a partial answer that I can give, but I'm dying to talk again and really talk about this. One of the things that we've come to understand is that people who have come in with a mission, and I think you and I are both in that category, there's just no other explanation of why we're so obsessed with this, we have our own particular guides who have us on a need-to-know basis. Now, anyone who's listened to me for a while knows that my primary spirit guide was once Thomas Jefferson, and He is a very stern taskmaster. There's a lot he won't tell me. He won't even allow me to be past life regressed or anything. And I know and I speak what he tells me to speak, and that's it. But I know for certain that there's a lot more to know, and I understand that one day I will be allowed to know it, just not now, because they want to keep us focused on whatever task we agreed with them before we came into body that we were going to perform. And I've looked into some cases, because I've seen some too, Alex, where there is some conflict. And in nearly every case, it looks to me as sort of like you and I might say, no, that's turquoise. I might say, no, it's teal. It's more that they've seen a slightly different view of the same thing. But I'm dying to see whatever you have. We're going to do this as soon as we possibly can do it again. But Alex, how do people find you? Because I want everybody to pay attention now to Alex Sakiris.
Well, that's really nice of you, Roberta. Skeptico, and it's spelled with a K at the end, K-O at the end. But really, if you just type in Skeptico, you'll find it. And then the book is, I don't really have the book too prominently featured on the website. But if you remember the phrase, why science is wrong, you'll easily find the book on Amazon.
There are very few books anymore in this field that I feel I've really learned something from, but I learned quite a bit about Alex. His book is not too long. It's easy to read. And best of all, Rupert Sheldrake actually wrote your foreword, and he's one of my biggest idols. So,
Really? You know, it's funny because I just interviewed. Do we have another minute?
Well, yeah, a minute. Sure.
You know, I just interviewed Rupert again a couple of weeks ago because he has a new book, Science and Spiritual Practices. And Rupert is a Christian, and I'm not a Christian. I'm just not a religious person. We can talk about that later, too. I think I'd be pretty much closer to you. But anyways, when I asked Rupert to write the foreword to this book, he was reluctant to. He's like, I can't. You know, I'm already in enough trouble with science as it is. And he's British and he's English and it's even tighter over there. So he wrote this really kind of forward endorsement, non-endorsement kind of thing. And I said, Rupert, that's perfect. I want to go just with that because it's
a further
example
it's
of how
title.
it's, you know, Rupert, you've said so many of the same things, but you can't come out and say it like this. Why? Why can't we say science is wrong about almost everything because science is wrong about consciousness? That really, for people like Rupert, isn't controversial, but even Rupert can't say that because there still is the boycott. There still is the control. You know, you won't get the job. You won't get the promotion. That's a little bit too far out there kind of thing. So,
everybody,
you know, it's fun for...
It's S-K-E-P-T-I-K-O. Remember the K's, because when I first tried to Google you, I put a C in there, and that was not a good thing. You've got to listen to some of his podcasts. You've got to read his book, everyone, because here is somebody who is working on the cutting edge of consciousness, which when you're old, you're going to remember that you heard him on the radio. I'm so glad you were here, Alex. We're going to do this again soon. And meanwhile, everybody, you, as you know, this is Roberta Grimes. You're listening to Seek Reality, and we have just spent a wonderful, wonderful time together with somebody who is an extraordinary human being. Now, as you know, my books are The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and for young children, The Fun of Meeting Jesus. If you want to contact me, all you need to do is go to robertagrimes.com. There's a contact block there, and I answer emails, provided that you will give me your email address. Some people give me the wrong address or forget to leave it, and then I'm kind of frustrated because there's nothing I can do for them. Now, we have been listening today to someone who I think is going to, as I say, is going to be huge in the world because he is fearlessly looking at the most important thing there is for any of us to look at, which is what is really going on. And he is not trying to do it from a viewpoint of certain things are taboo. He's open-mindedly seeking the truth. If you're a Christian, you know Jesus told us to do this. If you understand the greatest scientists who ever lived before the start of the 20th century, you know that's what they were trying to do. We have the opportunity to do it now, and our friend Alex Sakiris is right on the cutting edge of it, so we certainly are going to talk with him again. Meanwhile, as you know, past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes, through the Seek Reality app, for free in the iTunes store. And earlier episodes, of course, are available through Dream Vision 7 Radio. If you wonder where you can find me, there's a radio tab on the Roberta Grimes website. Just go there, and we try to keep that updated. But I'm very happy right now to be with XZBN, and I hope that we'll be together for years to come. I feel that finally, after almost 5 years, I've gotten my podcasting together. And I have said this before, but I want to say it to you again. I am so grateful that you're there. You're the reason why I do this. If it were not for you listening, there would be no need for me to spend so much time reading books and seeking the perfect guests for you. I'm trying to help you in particular to open your mind and heart and know the truth. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Enjoy, please, and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.